Chris Russell here with Bonnie's women's basketball head coach, Jim Crowley. Our first Jim Crowley show of the season, kind of a preseason episode. Coach, thanks for joining us.
Chris, good to see you. I hope you had a great summer.
I hope you did as well. And I think you had a very busy summer with seeing some new faces, new names, new players, all trying to incorporate into your style. I was here on campus in June. We did some recording of the players for their intros. Tell me about those summer workouts.
Yeah, it's unique, right? Every job evolves, and obviously college basketball, college athletics job has evolved quite a bit publicly over the last few years. But one of those evolutions is how much more accessibility you get to your players, which is good in a lot of ways. And it was good before. It's even probably more important now because of the turnover in roster. So we were able to have pretty much our entire team here for 6 weeks, and we were able to work with them on a daily basis. They took some classes online, but they were also all in the same dorm. They were all on the same floor. So it was a really good opportunity, not just for us to get to know them and them to get to know us and our system and how we do things, but a really good opportunity for them to get to know each other and spend some time with each other, get to know the area without the pressure of 15 credits and 2,000 other kids around. And it really allows them to get comfortable being a Bonaventure student athlete. And I thought our group did a really good job with that. And I thought my staff did an exceptional job of finding different ways to help that process accelerate.
I think that's terrific because it's not a normal transition to a college like St. Bonaventure. And I say that because not just the location of the school, but there's a different feeling to being a Bonnie as to maybe part of the quote-unquote basketball factories. There's something different to being a student athlete here.
Right. One of the things we sell and we're really proud of is our community. Mm-hmm. And that's on campus, but even more importantly, that's across the whole region. And so they feel that, whether when they, you know, go to Tops or they go to Sprague's, mm-hmm. or people come up and talk to them, or they're just in shooting in the Riley Center and fans stop by and say hi to them or meet them at the Oilers game or whatever it may be. So to your point, that's a really important part of who we are. And we really feel we've got a group that understands and is excited about being part of that.
On the Bonnie's Online Network, we did something new this year where we had a chance to talk with practically all of the players who were here during the summer, a little Meet the Bonnie's introduction. And what I thought was very interesting is this roster is very, I wouldn't say 100%, but very central and western New York based. There's a lot of talent in this region that might not have been farmed for quite a while.
Well, I mean, I'm a big believer in the region. I'm from here. I've lived here the majority of my life. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we decided when we came back in 23 was we've got to cast a net and get local players. And it, specifically in Western New York right now, is a really talented time for individuals. They're all over college basketball, and there's a whole bunch of young ones coming through as well. So my staff has worked really hard at it, and I'm fortunate enough to have some very long-lasting and special relationships that have helped me stay connected to people. But there's also, and certainly people from all over can feel it, but there's just also a familiarity with our area and our school with people who are a little closer to the region. Mm-hmm. Hard to escape a Bonaventure person as you walk through upstate New York.
Sure.
At some point, and they're going to tell you about it. And
right.
That's the beauty of our place. And so everyone that we were able to bring in, for almost everyone for the most part, has that connection. And even folks from further away, I mean, Bree Boyd's from California, but her brother is one of Deion Wright's best friends.
Right.
Vo is from Serbia, but her prep school coach, James Singleton, played here for the men's team. So that was something that we wanted to make sure people knew what they were getting into. Mm-hmm. We can say it. But the ability to understand and want what we are was really important to us. And we think we've got the majority, if not all, of our players who understand that, embrace it, and are ready to thrive in it.
Well, it must have been something very attractive to the transfers as well. I've said to you for the last couple of seasons we've sat down, obviously it's a brave new world in college sports with bringing in transfers as opposed to just bringing a high school senior on board. You get the benefit of some of that experience with the transfers and a pretty good mix on the roster of experienced and young. Even Mac Pettinelli staying here and giving you that experience as well. Is that first in your thoughts when you're recruiting and because recruiting never stops. We know
that. Right.
But when you're recruiting and trying to look at the next year's squad, is that something you keep in mind? I want a balance of experience and I want a balance of youth.
In some ways, it's to your point, it's very different now. It used to be you could plan. You could plan that, you know what, I need a point guard in this class, or we really need a shooter in this class or size. Now it's who can help us.
Yeah.
And even more importantly, like talent is obviously got to be there, but who will buy into who we are and what we do?
Mm-hmm.
To be very frank, I got away from specifically recruiting that for a few years, and it caused a lot of frustration and not as many wins as we should have. So we really think that for the most part, not only are folks more experienced or at a higher level of talent or physicality and maturity, but there are also people who are more ready to buy in to what our place is about and what we're asking them.
And you have players that have experience not just on their home court or not just from their particular school before they came here. You've got experience outside with tournaments, with AAU. This is really a far-reaching world to recruit from now.
It absolutely is, but it's a smaller world.
Yeah.
You know,
in some ways.
For instance, in our summer recruiting period, they have these massive events that could have up to 90 courts in one venue.
Right.
So, and that those people could be from all over the world. I mean, the tournament we go to, there's teams from Australia and Canada and all over. And so in that aspect, the world has shrunk quite a bit because they're all right there. And in that aspect, it's harder to you still can find some folks that people miss, but it's a little harder. I mean, the 2012 team that was so good, we had one kid on that team who was offered by any other Division I schools. And it wasn't because they weren't good. It was just the way the world was then.
Back then.
Yeah. Now you put someone who's maybe on a smaller A team, someone's going to tweet about how good they are, and then someone's going to check on it. And just so the world has opened up more for the student athlete, but it's also shrunk a little bit more for coaches because everything is a little bit more accessible.
That was actually going to be my next question, just to get your opinion on, has the balance swung? And I don't mean that in a harsh way, that coaches were taking advantage of student athletes or, you know, anything like that. But it really has gone in the balance has swung to the student athletes' favor of what they want to do with their career. Would I be right in assessing that?
Yeah, I think, you know, rightfully so. We've taken a look at, you know, it's not me. It's the people who make the decisions, and
right.
I'm not one of them. What can we do for them? What can we do for them? And a lot of times, early in my career, it was, you know, how do the student athletes make sure, how do they stay involved? How do they stay in coach? Now it's how do coaches keep student athletes?
Yeah.
In some ways, there's still, you still got to be who you are, but, so it's I just opportunity. I think that's the word that covers it all is, and listen, I think you could grab people from 10 years ago who certainly would have liked to have been paid money, but would say that they got great opportunities. Like the opportunities that presented themselves turned out really well. That just folks have more now, which means more changes, which means more thought through things, which can lead to more stress as well. And so, which we are seeing that. We are seeing some more things because of different, more opportunities, more choices, more decisions can lead to more stress. So you're dealing with that as well sometimes.
I would think one of the benefits that you have, though, is keeping a great staff together. Even besides the student athletes, we see at the Division I level turnover in the coaching staff. Sometimes even we just had that at Auburn on the men's side with Bruce Pearl. I think that one of the advantages that you have, at least from where I sit and see, is that you have a staff that's going to stay together. Coach Brunelli and Coach Rombach, that's got to be a positive for not just recruiting, but for implementing your system too, right?
Yeah. And I mean, the biggest positive is they're just tremendous human beings. You know, all the folks that have stayed are really good people and really good role models and put our kids first and look out for them in all ways. But to your point, the continuity becomes really, you know, it gets to a point where you don't have to say things, you know, and people know. And even if you, you know, aren't around, they know what's expected of you. And even more important now when roster turnover is happening so often and quickly.
Getting the players on campus and all of the remodeling that's being done to the Riley Center.
How about it? Looks great,
which
right?
is absolutely amazing. But everything's been happening, it seems, at the same time.
That's fair.
Whether it's down on the court with the new basket stanchions or whether it's up here on the floor for the fans. Is the Riley Center a centerpiece for recruiting, the history of it, the way it looks, the way it feels? And when these players start to play and they hear a crowd, it's a different kind of crowd. Is that a recruiting piece too?
Yeah. And I mean, first of all, when folks come into Brown and White, and I think people are just, as soon as you walk in the building, you're going to see new things.
Oh, sure.
And there's more happening. It's really exciting that way. And credit to the folks who have done that for us and for the student athletes. People have put a lot of time in, a lot of work, and it's really made a incredibly positive impact every day. But yeah, the Riley Center is part of our community, and you know, some people may think differently, but to me, it's a center point of our university. There's so many things in this building that aren't athletics,
right?
Student affairs, student activities, you know, all that. So
the
many
post
things.
Office,
yeah, right. So many things are the bookstore, and it's the centerpiece of our community, and community is who we are. So certainly we'll take them down and talk about the crowds and show film this is a great basketball area, and you play good basketball and people are going to come. We've proved that before. We'll prove it again. And that's an exciting thing for the right kind of people. And so without question, it's a major part of, it's the first thing they see when they come in, right?
Yep.
Absolutely. The first thing when we meet them, you know, out by the baseball field, which is under construction, or we meet them out back when there's three different activities going on, and then we bring them in, and now there's new floors and fresh paint and you know, all these things, and right from the get go, you're like, wow, this place has this cool, great charm, and new things are happening. So it's just the momentum, right? That's the word we use a lot. The momentum here is building and building and building, and we want you to be part of it.
You mentioned Brown and White night. So as we're taping your show before this airs, it's going to be on Friday, the 26th in the Riley Center. Free. It's going to be a tie into family weekend. So there's going to be a lot of folks there. Exciting. It's not quite the midnight madness that we used to do, or the fan jams that we used to do. But we haven't had this in a couple of years. And I think it's really great, not just for the student athletes who don't play sports to be a part of, and parents and alumni and fans. But I think it's really cool for the players on the team as well to get a little bit of that, I guess they say Riz, that's the new word that they use, right? The young people to get their intros and have the light show. I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, you bring up the new word, but we're old guys. So yeah. do you know what coach created Midnight Madness?
No.
Lefty Driesell.
So when he was at Maryland?
Yeah, it was his way of trying to counter the attention that the folks down Tobacco Road got, right?
Okay.
NC State and North Carolina and Duke got all this basketball attention. That was his thought to get it going. At least that's the story to it. So, we're a basketball place. We're a basketball school. We're a basketball community. People care. People are passionate. So anything we can do to promote that and feed that passion, that, you know, our kids get to see it, parents get to see it, recruits get to see it. The folks who organize it do an amazing job. The community does a great job supporting it. And then you put it with family. So you've got potentially, you know, a general freshman student here, and their parents are coming to visit, and they get a feel for something that's so vital to the Bonaventure experience.
Sure.
And there's so many other great activities going on. I mean, they do family weekend right here. For us, it is that opportunity to get out, get excited, and go up and down a little bit, and hopefully not look too raggedy when we do that. So that there's a coach's side of that.
Right? Yeah, I was going to say that's a little coach speak. Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a problem.
We want to make sure that we're not passing the ball to the bleachers. So,
while I have you, mm-hmm. as we finish up again, just a little preseason. We'll be sitting down so many times, mm-hmm. Hopefully throughout the season, and hopefully in our new production room. That would be nice if we can get you down there
it'll
too.
It'll be happening.
The basketball teams are going to be bringing back the 86-87 team, which was the first ever official Division I team. And then your 2015-2016 team that made the NCAA tournament, had that terrific Atlantic 10 season, terrific season overall, beat Oklahoma State in the first round. And those players were still around when I started covering, when you had first left. What's it going to be like to see those players again? 10 years can be a short time, but it also can be a long time.
Yeah, twofold. I mean, to have the group that started it, right? And certainly there were teams before, but to have that group that went from winning an Eastern Region Division II title to then having to go right into the A-10.
Yeah.
Right into the A-10. And at that time, the A-10 of West Virginia, the A-10 had Penn State, the A-10 had Temple, the A-10 had Rutgers.
Yes.
I mean, we're talking some of the top teams in the country.
Right.
And it was good luck. And so that group and what they did and what they established to then have a team 30 years later that went to the highest point of women's basketball and had success and we're drawing big crowds. And so to celebrate both of those teams, to honor both of those teams. And then one of the great things we said about Bonaventure is a community and how it's the tie that binds.
Right.
You know, you run into someone, there could be a 22-year-old and a 62-year-old. If they both went to Bonaventure, they could talk over very similar things. Well, not only do we get to do that, we get to do that through women's basketball on the 22nd of November when we honor those two teams and celebrate women's basketball and its importance here at our university. So really excited for that whole thing. And then the 15-16 team, that was a unique team because a year before we were pretty good and we really underachieved. And it was a hard off season for those folks.
Sure.
And again, different time. They all stuck it out.
Right.
They all stuck it out, and they are still really tight today. And I will always think part of that is because of what they went through.
Yes.
And they predetermined. And there was a lot of cool moments. We at one point had undefeated at home, had a great win over GW at home. And I apologize. I talk about these teams, and I can go for a while.
Go ahead.
I'll make this one quick.
No.
So we played four games in a week at home in the non-conference schedule. We played Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, Saturday.
Wow.
So we played, I think it was, and these were the teams. We played Georgetown Saturday. We played James Madison Monday, who ended up in the NCAA tournament and was coached by the coach who's now at Kentucky, Kenny Brooks, who's a fantastic coach. We had UB come here Wednesday, who ended up in the NCAA tournament. They won the MAC this year, mm-hmm. that year. And then that Saturday, Penn State came in. Penn State and Georgetown might have been flipped. But that's four pretty good.
Well, we're not talking about Division II
schools.
The first two,
we played without Katie Healy. She was nursing it, and we won all four. And that was when we had a great win at Stony Brook that got everybody on board. That mm-hmm. was when everybody decided, you know what, we're in this together, which is sounds like it should happen for every team. Very rare. And it happened at that moment, and we all knew it. And then shortly after that, we had that week, four games in a week at home, which everyone said we were going to be crazy, and we were until we won them all. And then I that week got us in the NCAA tournament, got us that at-large bid, because UB, as I said, ended up getting the NCAA tournament. James Madison ended up getting in the NCAA tournament, and Penn State and Georgetown both were right around top 50 wins. So it really catapulted our RPI back at that time. And each game, it seemed like more and more people came out.
Sure.
Each game, more and more. Hey, these guys beat these guys. These guys beat these guys, and to the pinnacle on that Saturday, just having an incredible crowd and finishing off the week.
And the crowds that year, we all had our favorites. So we had a Miranda section, and a Katie section, a Kelsey Rombach section, Mariah Ruff, who was very important and still had a couple more years to go. She was a young player.
We had all the folks from Randolph coming over.
From McKenna Maycock, too. Yeah. That, I remember that team very well. So that, speaking of Kelsey, I mean, she's got to be really excited, too.
Yeah, knowing Kelsey, though, she'll be locked into Albany and who we play. And and we'll say, you know, I'll see you later. But we got to get the things taken care of with our game. But as I said, they're still really close.
Yeah.
That group of seniors is still in regular contact with one another. And, I mean, that's – you hope that's not being lost with the current climate and that people are – again, they have their opportunities, their opportunity to move on quicker. It's easier, all for it. But, you know, sometimes with when things become more convenient, you lose some things, too. And hopefully that's not something that these current student athletes are losing, because lifelong friendships are built out of the struggles you go through, especially on a team.
Yeah, those teams, it's almost like basic training in the military.
Yeah, there were some things that might have been compared to that in those days. There were some things. But And again, those folks were influenced by, you know, Chelsea Boker, who's now the coach. She was a senior when they were sophomores, and really, really made them understand what it's all about to be part of this program, to be part of things here. And you know, I know she's teaching only, and I'm hopeful and sure she'll be around.
Oh, sure.
So just again, that interaction of people in the program.
We're going to wrap up here, Coach. I know we're going to sit down again before the season starts. One thing about the non-conference schedule I just want to ask you about is this MTE that's going to be in Cleveland over Thanksgiving, and it's spread out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Who makes that decision? Do you look for those in advance, like 2-3 seasons down the line? How do they come together?
Yeah, one of the unique things, so the NCAA just changed the rule. The rule currently is you have to get an MTE so that it gets approved and all this stuff. So you find these events that you can get 3 games, but they only count as 2 games. So you basically can get free games.
Okay.
And we were looking for one of those. We really wanted to do one of those. We just felt with a new team, the chance to play an extra couple games would be really good for us.
Sure.
Ideally, we want to do one that wouldn't have to go far away. They have a lot of them in exotic locations, but those are incredibly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love Cleveland. That's a pretty good location to me. So we saw this one, and the program had been in it before. And Cleveland State makes the decision that, hey, we're not going to play on Thanksgiving. We're going to do it Wednesday, not play Thursday and Friday, Saturday. And that was, you know, we worked some different things with how we'll handle that. But for us, it was the opportunity to get more games. Now, moving forward, next year, everybody can just play 32 games. There's no MTEs. Everybody has the opportunity. They don't have to. They have the opportunity to play up to 32 games.
Okay.
So, you know, we still would look for events, to 3 games in 3 days. I think it also prepares you for holiday tournaments.
Oh, sure.
It gives you a chance to see how people handle, you know, ups and downs of playing in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't – there'll be more of them, I would think, because you don't have to go through any hoops. The hardest thing to get them to go is to get your people – like, that's hard to have an MA, to have your coaches and players are used to, like, around that time you play.
Mm-hmm.
But the table folks, like, although you're asking a lot of them 3 straight days, and potentially, like, a place like ours where they do it, the men as well, and the men may play home on Sunday. You know, like, that's – so that comes into play sometimes when people are looking to plan them. But we're looking forward to that one. Cleveland State is an outstanding program. Mm-hmm. They've run that. Those type of tournaments for the last few years, so I'm sure they'll run it right.
And just for anybody listening, MTE is multi-team event, so
we're speaking the language.
We're speaking the language right here. We don't say tournaments or anything like that anymore.
So I think we'll see a lot more of the old-fashioned tournaments,
mm-hmm.
like the old, or the old classics where they don't actually play winners and losers,
right?
Just play 2 games. I think more of those will start to come back. Those have those were fading away a little bit. You know, and in the current world, right, that's the where you can play as your at large team. That's where you have a chance to play against the bigger teams, because very few bigger teams will do home and homes anymore. They just don't have to.
Yeah, I remember one of those where St. Mary's of California came all the way across the country to Orlando, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't one. It wasn't an event where there's necessarily a winner. You're just going to have the 2 games.
Yep.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
So it'll be, I think that would be something you would look forward to, the 32 game schedule.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It makes it a little easier. I like having, like, I'm sure players do too. Like, you want to play.
Yeah.
You want to play. And We're starting with summer and as early as we start, like as a coach, you always want more time, but the reality is there's a lot of time. Like it's at some point you got to go and gotta figure it out.
We just have over a month, really, as we're taping today to the exhibition game. And, that'll be a doubleheader kind of sort of with the men.
Yeah.
So we'll have, should have a good crowd in the Rally Center, for that. And that should answer some questions, I would imagine.
It probably will answer a few and add a few.
Add a few.
You know, that's what early in the year, you know, we just practiced today. There was a couple questions answered and there's a few more that came up. And that's the fun part of the job is how do you keep those answers consistent and how do you find answers to the other ones?
All right. Well, we'll leave it there right now, Coach, because we'll sit down again in a couple of weeks, for another edition of the, Coach Jim Crowley Show. Coach, thanks as always for your time, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Chris.